Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG pod overflow, the Cinephobe cold opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
Said the OG pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays. You're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like? Because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora. He's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Tom, utensils, major contribution to civilization or unnecessary burden?
I'm going to go unnecessary burden. Some of my favorite meals are without a fork, without a knife, without chopsticks. This would probably be my favorite challenge to eat, the elimination challenge. So I'm going to go with burden.
They're unnecessary and dainty, and we should eat with like Ethiopian injera for everything. This is Pack Your Knives. I'm Kevin Arnovitz.
And I'm Tom Haberstroh.
Tom, 10, 9. We are now down to 9 chefs. We had, I thought, a really interesting episode. Huge fan of Gagan Anand, the guest chef, Punjabi chef who's based in Bangkok. His restaurant is always on the world's best list. I think it spoke to a kind of the value of a guest judge who really gets it. Also, did you know, Tom, he was famous in 2021 for doing an entire Star Wars themed like set menu at his restaurant in Bangkok?
No, I did not know that.
Oh, yeah. Like he did. Like the Dune Sea dish and Jabba's Palace dish, like a space cookie to start. This was some very major Star Wars propaganda in the culinary space. And I'm actually, at some point we have to get him on to talk about this.
I love it. He was an excellent guest judge. And I kind of like it when they have like the quickfire judge stay on for the rest of the episode because you get to know the guest judge a little bit more. You get a little bit more texture. And he seemed like he was so game for everything. The chefs, I think with this elimination challenge, they know his deal. They know that he is more Buddha and Tom than he is Sarah and Dale. Just from a, you know, foofy, tweezery, outside the box, innovative, let me get out the liquid nitrogen, all that stuff. But he also doesn't take himself too seriously. And that's what I think is really important on this show is you got to have fun. And I think he represents that, the best of both worlds, is you can be super nerdy, Star Wars dinner, whatever, but also you can just look at socks and say, I love your socks. This is great. I'm having a lot of fun eating your food. So I love this episode from I think the construct of it was really tight, and we'll talk about it more later, but the idea of not just visually pleasing, not just with your hands, no utensils, but also have a message. It was a lot to tackle, but I thought it brought out the best in the chefs. And like Tom said, he said this was the best food that they had all season collectively. And I got to hand it to Top Chef. That just, the challenge in of itself, I think brought out kind of that creativity, that innovation, and just deliciousness in a way that I wasn't expecting.
So it started with an emoji challenge. By the way, like a conceit I'm not crazy about, but it actually produced good, interesting food. So I'm cool with it. There was an entire, like several emoji placards, I guess, that you had to go as a chef. When the minute they pressed go, you have to run and go get one. There were multiple people who wanted the flame emoji. Only
Ali didn't even understand what was going on. Like Ali, I got the
poor Ali does not know of this silly Irish superstition of four leaf clovers or whatever it is. Just thinks it's
Not universal? Is that culturally universal?
No, it clearly is not. I mean, that's kind of the beautiful thing about our world. As much as we're being watered down into this massive global uniculture, there's something quite quaint about the fact that there are like accomplished, talented people who've never heard of a four leaf clover. Like they have their own good luck talismans, and I don't know what they are, but. I thought that was endearing, even though it finished kind of on the bottom, probably for the first time in an individual challenge of any kind. Ali did for his herb salad, cucumber gazpacho. And poor Victoire kind of froze, ended up picking nigiri, but not actually preparing raw fish, which was a little, which I think even.
And she knew it. The moment she did that, she just absolutely clammed up, no pun intended, and just thought like, what am I doing? Why did I choose that? And she had, you know, the pick of the litter. She could choose whatever she wanted of like seven of them. She wanted to do, what was it? She wanted the flame or the fire one initially, I think we got from the confessional. And then she froze, like you said, and had to do, you know, not something in her wheelhouse. But you know what? I'm with you. At first I was like, this is kind of gimmicky. This is kind of cheesy and lame. And then as they started making it, it was basically Top Chef is like, be inspired by this element and then go cook your ass off.
Yeah. I mean, Charbal and Amar did the kind of on the face of it, right? Like I'm going to get the banana and I'm going to make a plantain dish. I'm going to get the duck emoji and I'm going to slow cook duck. Right. And then you had sort of Nicole actually, I think probably did the most creative where I'm going to get the little guy in disguise emoji and disguise, you know, create a dish that is not evident to the eye what it is, right? Which is this like Vietnamese meatball with a pandan leaf.
Where are you on this molding thing with Buddha?
I mean, like you do you is kind of where I'm at. I think it's a little superfluous, but it is kind of, by the way, he's doing it very well. I mean, the hands work. We'll talk about the hands for the elimination to the extent that he had issues on his elimination dish, kind of finishing, I think, middle bottom. It wasn't because of the hands, but the cold skull worked and he actually won the freak. I think we can fairly say that he won the quickfire with his cold face, coconut snow with candy ginger, putting it in the face of a skull and calling it freezing to death, which is morbid and weird, but actually brilliant. So good
and
for Buddha.
He had some gore in there. She had some raspberry notes in there. Yeah. So it got a little bloody there. I mean, come on. It's just so Buddha saying, confessing that he brought $1,000 worth of moldings or molds for the show is just perfect Buddha. Just, he knows what he does. He brings molds to the competition and he's executing. I think it's going to get probably a little old at some point, but it's not old yet. It's still pretty fresh and interesting and funny. You know, the twist that he's doing here, and it's not tacky. You know, when he's bringing in the skull, I had a little moment of like,
it's a little kitschy, not tacky, but kitschy.
Yeah. Kitschy. That's probably better. Yeah. He won the quickfire. I thought Nicole, I think should have won the quickfire because of just her. It was true to the actual construct of the brief of the quickfire. And I just thought that it was spicy. It was innovative. I think to me it was a harder cook, but Buddha just is doing, you know, out of the box stuff, kind of inside the mold, and he's performing really well. And Ali, just poor Ali, did not get the whole four leaf clover thing. And Victoire just did not pick the right emoji. I felt for her immediately when that happened. But Amar continues to do like these very homey, decadent dishes, and the judges are loving it. And he gets in the top three on the quickfire once again, just performing at a high level here with some heavy. He did the lamb shank, the flan. It seems to be serving him well that he's playing to the crowd with some really just. I don't know. It seems like he's going for just over the top decadent dishes, and it feels like he's just nailing it.
Yeah. I mean, he is, other than his little over sweet chicken and pancakes the other day, a couple weeks ago, he's pretty much just finding himself in the top on almost every competition in the last several weeks. And clearly I undervalued him. What's also interesting, I'm curious to, we'll talk about it a little bit with the elimination, but I do believe that, I mean, he's far more versatile than meets the eye, right? Like he's not regarded as one of these technical chefs, and yet he continues, when needing to, turn out technically advanced dishes. And when he doesn't, he doesn't. And he's happy to make the braised lamb. He's happy, you know, to do, you know, whatever kind of his style of food. He's happy to do kind of a very sweet roasted plantain with miso butterscotch. He does have a sweet tooth, which is interesting. He's kind of intrusive. Yes. Like, he does sweet more often for savory dishes than I can remember anybody in recent memory, which is interesting because I never pegged the judges, particularly Padma and Tom, is needing that. Whereas Gail, you always sense like Gail clearly has a sweet tooth. And when she's at judges' tables, she is somebody, you know, Padma will say like, I found it a little sweet. And Gail will say, well, I love the sweet. Right. But Amar is kind of an odd risk taker. It's not apparent to meet the eye, but he does take selective risks. And right now it is really working for him. He is on a roll. If you're according to your scoring system, he's ranked third only behind Ali and Nicole right now in total points, neck and neck with Nicole. And of the kind of bottom picks, he is clearly kind of representing the margin of you're kicking my ass in the point system.
Yeah. And I think people just take him lightly because of the fact he's so free spirited, just happy go lucky, everyone's favorite teddy bear. But he's just performing. He's just continually executing delicious food within the constructs of the show. And he's no slouch here. He is a serious contender to win this whole thing. Even though he seems to be so laid back and everyone's, you know, comic relief on the show, he's performing at a high level and one of our last picks, like you said. So, Amar did really well. I think looking at the other side on Quickfire, we buried the lead a little bit. We're going to have Dale later in this program to join us here to talk about his run on Top Chef. We'll talk about his elimination challenge, but Dale will be joining us. And it was a short-lived performance. The quickfire didn't go so well with the chicken noodle soup in homage to his mother and just the hominess and the love that she put into that dish when he was growing up. And it didn't nail. It didn't, you know, I think if that's a dish that you can't do in a quick fire, as Padma said, it didn't come together. So Dale didn't finish in the top three, finished in the bottom three there. And Victoire and Ali, we already talked about.
Yeah. Chicken soup is one of those things. I mean, there's a reason there are people who will, it's like when I got into the bone broth thing several years ago, I mean, I was doing chicken bones in a bone broth for like days. I never turned the flame off. Right.
Yeah.
It's a dish that is so simple. It's basically chicken soup, but what makes it delicious is just the depth that you get from time. And yes. So it was an unusual choice. He did some handmade noodles, which is really impressive. Let's go because we do have Dale coming up. Let's quickly kind of run through the elimination. And then we can get more insight on the elimination from Dale. But it was kind of your threesome let it off, man. I mean, we've seen Amar, Ali, and Charbal kind of sort of as the three amigos just kind of doing their thing. And this is not the first time this has happened. The elimination itself is make a dish that does not require utensils, which isn't terribly hard, really.
It's not very restrictive, right? Like, as I'm seeing these dishes, I was like, oh, you can basically do whatever you want. You just, like, tacos, burger. Like, just thinking about how rare do I eat food with that requires utensils, it seemed like they had a pretty wide range canvas here.
Right. And so, you know, your trio there, Amar was kind of, Ali won the challenge with his mushroom kibbeh, his chicken pea mousse, his pickled grape leaves, kind of a mezza without meat, and with this kind of ice effect. His statement and mission and message was about, it was about sustainability. He wanted to go vegetarian. He wanted to kind of represent the melting ice glaciers, and the visual effect was wonderful, and apparently the food was delicious. And use mushroom in lieu of what you would probably use there is lamb. And he won again, man. He is just absolutely, I mean, he's one of the more impressive chef testants, Tom, in recent memory. I mean, he owns it every week.
Yeah, and like Amar has liked to point out, is that he used the cut off an artificial fake leaf from the stew room to plate his dish.
That's hilarious.
And it's just great. It's resourceful,
he's
and it plays the whole climate change.
Yes.
Right, he didn't want to cut, you know, live plants. Of course, Gabri kind of poked fun at that in the stew room afterwards. But he's you know, I hate to say it, but it's why I picked him number two, I guess. He's performing at a really high level. And Amar, his pal, also in the top with the papaya salad, deconstructed. Holy shit. Like that dish. If you had put that on a plate and said, who made that dish, not in a million years would I have picked Amar. And it was brilliant. The whole sliding it like a hockey puck. He had the sausage there, sliding it across the dot, and he had the dust on top of it. The versatility of Amar, like, don't count him out. He's been outrageously good. And you know, this one wasn't necessarily the most, the same profile that we're talking about with just really sweet dishes. You might have thought this was Tom. You might have thought this was Buddha, but it was Amar just doing an amazing job. Whereas I think, you know, Sarah kind of played to her strengths and more of her homey Paducah, Kentucky southern dish with a fried rib where it was just, they loved it. The pecan pork with cocoa buttermilk, it seemed like a huge hit. Surprised she didn't get in the top three, but Charbel playing up the Lebanese flag. I thought that was a beautiful dish, well executed. The only knock on that one was that they just wish they had more of the chips. But I thought Sarah was just as good as those other three with her fried rib. And you know what? Like Tom said, there were 10 really good dishes, excellent dishes. And someone had to go home here. And of course, in the bottom three, we're seeing Dale, Victoire, and Tom. The big surprise here is Tom, Kevin.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. He is a technical chef with great ambition, and it doesn't work if you can't always execute. And he's having clearly a lot of trouble executing the highest degree of difficulty dishes, which he routinely, of the 10, 11 chefs in the last couple of weeks, he has routinely gone for high degree of difficulty, and he's not executing, which is dangerous.
Yep.
And he basically wanted to kind of create what it sounded like, almost a pumpkin mochi, right? This thing that he said would eat like putty. And that, I imagine it's also very hard on set where, you know, you need to literally an extra minute of sit is the difference between having the consistency you want and the consistency that can land you on the bottom. The judges stipulated that had it just been for flavor, he might have won the competition, which I think is reassuring to some extent. I mean, obviously for him, he said it was a second gut punch, but I think it's good to know that you're not screwing up your flavors. You're clearly still, you know, brilliantly creative. Pumpkin, ginger, turmeric is just a great combo, but it fell apart. And he consistently, just as it did kind of his tomato gel last week, this is a problem. Because I think it's fair to say, like, if he is capable, like, the only thing that's going to do Tom in is his ambition. And yep. I know there is this great kind of self-empowering attitude to like, I didn't come here to play it safe. Well, maybe sometimes you should play it safe. Like, there's nothing wrong with, you know, Charbal is very interesting because basically, is it Top Chef or Top Dip? In the last 2 weeks, like this is a guy, and by the way, which is totally what you expect. Like, nobody makes dips like the Lebanese. I mean, Lebna, the za'atar paste, the tomato paste, what he did last week with the beet hummus, like nobody does dips like the Lebanese, and he's leaning into it, right? And so I don't say that as a critique. One of the reasons Charbal is not finding himself on the bottom is he is kind of playing it a little safe, but he's working his strengths. And I think you can do that and still come up with great, and this is a tribute to Charbal, not an insult, though it sounds like a backhanded compliment. Like, Tom could learn a thing or two, right?
Yes.
And I just think this hubris of, oh, I didn't come here to play it safe. I mean, that's great, but you're going to go home at some point. Because, I mean, to be honest, as good as Tom is, he's not good enough, clearly, because his hit rate on these high degree of execution dishes is low. He is consistently ending up on the bottom because he can't make the jelly, or it doesn't, it looks weird, or he can't strain, or it's so the technicality is only as valuable as your power to execute it.
That's right. And it tasted great, right, Kevin?
Yeah.
Like everything that he put on the plate tasted great. It was just a mush instead of a mousse. It didn't work. And you know what the funny thing is, Kevin, is that this is a dish that he's done on the cruise ships a lot. And so the actual execution of it, maybe it was the time constraints. Maybe it was just the away game for him that he's not in his kitchen in the cruise ship. This is a dish that he's executed several times. And it included carrot. Once again, he seems to have this obsession, this fetish with carrots that he brought in on this pumpkin mousse in a glass case or in a trophy case. It was, I don't know, kind of weird on that level.
Shadow box of some kind, yeah.
Yeah. And look, that's this type, the kind of inventiveness is what will win Top Chef, is your ability to execute these high level technical dishes that can win you Top Chef, but it also can send you home really quickly. And so Tom is teetering right now. And I think Victoire being on the bottom, I didn't think she was going to get sent home. Dale didn't nail his protein. We'll talk to him about that. He gets sent home for the chicken and the other stuff. But you know what I like to say? He lost two dishes this year, and both of them included cilantro. And maybe that's a lesson, Kevin, is maybe we should stay away from cilantro, right?
I don't know what I'd do. I would have to kind of like abstain from that dish, you know? Victoire is, her cassava cannoli was, that's tough because it is a staple, it is a staple starch of the continent. It's important. It's also, I do feel like there is somewhat of a ceiling on it. And like there are potatoes and like there are a lot of kind of staple starches. Like there is a little bit of a ceiling on it. And, she boiled her potatoes rather than frying them. So the accompaniments, which were primarily, it seemed like consisting of various kind of potato elements, just didn't have any richness. And I think she probably came very close to going home, if not for Dale sort of not getting, it sounded like the mole was actually the best part of the dish, according to Judge Tom. But hey, you got to nail your protein. I sort of had it as Sarah and Gabri sharing fourth and fifth place for the pecan pork rib that Gagan said should be a fast food concept. It's so good. And Gabri for his sea bass al pastor style tacos, which just looked, I mean, that is what I wanted to eat there. I have to say of the 10 dishes, I really wanted to eat the sea bass al pastor tacos. And then I had sort of sharing sixth and seventh, Buddha and Nicole, who had successful dishes, but not incredibly successful. They both earned a little critique. Nicole's did kind of a jiambing style beef roll almost, it looked like, which is a great dish, but apparently a little dry on the outside and got a little ding for there. And Buddha did this bounty of vegetables that you dip in this caramelized onion black garlic puree with this brillat savarin, which is a triple cream cheese, bread crumbles in a, no, all of it, of course, in the mold of a hand. Which was a little creepy.
Just
a little creepy.
Wow. It was,
but we loved the
bowls. It was an amazing dish. Yeah. Amazing dish. I think, Kevin, it's a lot like the NBA this season. It's so the parity. They were all, everyone's a contender in the NBA playoffs right now. No one seems to have a leg up on each other. And this episode encapsulated how much parity there is, where I think Nicole could have won this whole thing. And yet she probably would have, was the sixth best dish. Like you said, Buddha's dish could have won the whole episode. Seventh place dish. Like you said, it's really hard to parse who should have been in the top three. And of course they give it to Charbel, Ali, and Amar in this one. But Kevin, would you have been surprised if Nicole, Sarah, and Buddha were in the top three?
Yeah, I mean, it seemed like there was something a little... They seemed unsatisfied with Buddha's dish for some reason, right? And that they sort of...
Tom wanted more radishes, which was weird. He was just like, why doesn't this have radishes? More bounty, less more of like the earthy mushroom dirt tones. He wanted more brightness, I guess.
Like kind of the brightness and the crunch that you get like when you're doing dips, right? Yeah, it's interesting. I wonder to what extent did Charbel, and I had him kind of coming in third in a more kind of message where Sarah's message was, hey, everyone slow down. And Nicole's message was family, which is a lovely message as well. But there was something, obviously, when you consider just the tragedy in Lebanon the last couple of years, like it is, I think, a more impactful message. And I wonder to what extent that provided. I'd love to ask the judges, where do you factor in message when deciding not only the winner, but also the sort of the entries, like because it is one of those challenges where you can fudge the theme. Right. You can say, don't be ignorant, which is a good message and a great message. I mean, it wasn't enough to save Dale, but you can sort of, hey, everyone slow down, make it like home. It was a really interesting elimination.
Very sexual episode, Kevin. A lot of licking, a lot of tongue action. It was just a lot of upfront licking the fingers. All of it was just, it was a very sensual episode and kind of nods to the whole element of just a lot of tongue. It was a lot of tongue action. Gail was like, I licked it up, and then they're giggling about it. It seemed like a really fun episode to participate in. And I think Gagan was an excellent judge. His dish that he did with the world map that you had to lick the plate and you get all sorts of different flavors and colors and textures. They seem to have a really good time with it, but I can tell you there was a couple contestants that I felt like just knew that like this isn't their wheelhouse and they're going to be playing from behind a little bit. One of them I think was Dale. I don't think he felt comfortable in this episode. I'm going to ask him about that. Just it didn't seem like this was his wheelhouse. He made a decision with the mole that I think like Victoire with the sushi, it seemed like it wasn't playing to his strengths. And I don't know what if he could do it all over again, would he have done things differently? But at this point, Kevin, in the competition, we're down to nine. We'll see what happens in Last Chance Kitchen. But I had a big week, Kevin, big week. And right now the standings are, I have 124 points. You have 84 points. I had a big week with Ali getting 10. He is at this point overall from the beginning, the top chef at this point in terms of the points. He's got two wins. He's won a quick fire. He's top three separate times. He's only been in the bottom three once, but Charbel's not very far away. He's got four top threes on his resume with obviously the first episode. He won the first challenge, and there's a three contestants that haven't finished in the bottom this season, Kevin. I don't know if these are the ones that you would have come off with the top of your head, but Sarah, Nicole, and Charbel have not finished in the bottom three at all this season. And I think it speaks to, they play really high floor food. This is a wide open race, and I'm not surprised that, Ali's doing well, but so is Buddha. So is so many other chefs on this season. You can't count any of them out. And I still want to see, I think we have the best Victoire performance ready. We haven't seen that yet, her breakout performance. It's a wide open race, and Gabri, he's still here. Hats off to Gabri. I think he's really come on after the first couple episodes, a little shaky, but he is producing some really high level, really delicious food. Saskatchewan, Canada. Our mustachioed favorite, Dale McKay, is joining us here on Pack Your Knives. A really tough time to bring you onto the show. I'm sorry we got to do this after you got eliminated, Dale. I'm really sorry. But you got back. You fought your way back into the competition. You got immunity for the second time this season. And then they say you got to eat without any utensils. You do the mole, unfortunately heading back to Last Chance Kitchen. But you know what? We're so happy to see you. We have lots to talk about. Thanks for joining the show.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
So, how is it just watching your performance? You said it was a roller coaster on the show. It really has been a roller coaster for you, but how has it been being able to watch it on your couch and seeing, reliving all, this whole experience for you?
You know, it's super different, especially this time around. It just feels very, very different. I'm a very different person than I was when I won my season, that was 12, 13 years ago. Slightly a different piece within myself, I guess you could say. I love to compete. And, you know, I think over the years doing all different types of competitions, whether it be sports or food or whatever, that, you know, you're not going to win them all. You can really prepare, you know, preparations to me has always been the biggest thing in my career when it comes to training. I always took my training very, very seriously, trying to be a very technical chef. And I look at competition the same way. You know, I prepared the best I could to do the best I could. And it obviously didn't necessarily work out the way that I'd want it to, but I think, I feel like I'm still walking away proud of what I did. You know, this is a very different season comparatively to any other one. There's so many great chefs and, I can't say that I'm walking away with my head down. I feel pretty good about the whole thing.
I'm always interested in, because I've met chefs who basically have said, you couldn't pay me to do a competition show. It's not because they consider it déclassé or anything else. It's just like, hey, it's not a competition. You know, I think being on a Top Chef requires a certain temperament. And I'm just wondering what it is about you specifically that is this like why, aside from the obvious, hey, you can, there's profile and media and you get a little exposure and to people you might not otherwise, like, what is the competitive appeal of this? Like, what drives a person to sequester themselves for months, like being tortured in a kitchen, basically?
See, I love it. Like I would, if someone called me and said, hey, let's do a quick fire tomorrow or right now, I would do it. And it's because I love that feeling. Like when you're about to start, and I usually kind of start kind of swaying back and forth and my head starts kind of going, and it's the type of pressure that I absolutely love. And it's like, again, even outside of the kitchen, I try to compete in other different things just because I just enjoy that kind of pressure on myself. The seclusion, all that kind of stuff, to me, that's like where I find I get the edge on some people, is the fact that I don't mind seclusion. I don't mind. I always say I'd be a good prisoner or a good boot camp. I can pretty much eat the same thing every day. I could do the same thing every day. I'm very good at getting into a groove and kind of staying there for long periods of time. I've done a lot of restaurant openings, and I find restaurant openings are similar, that you kind of just kind of give up everything for about 6 months. You're like a submarine. You just kind of got to go down and kind of conserve all the energy you can and really just put all your resources into specific things. And so that to me kind of excites me. And you know, like you said, you know, I know so many great chefs that are amazing chefs, but if you put them in those situations, they don't fare well. And I think it's just a certain type of competition or brain that you need to use. And not every, you know, I know chefs are much better chefs than I am that take a lot longer to come up with dishes. Their dishes in the end are amazing, but to turn them over in 30 seconds or in 20 minutes is very, very difficult for them. So I think it takes a certain type of chef for sure.
Okay. Gagan Anand walks through the door. What's going through your head as you're seeing him in the Top Chef kitchen?
To be honest with you, I don't know him that well. I know a lot of the chefs do know him really well. I got to be honest with you, I don't really follow a lot of chefs on Instagram. I don't buy a lot of cookbooks. I've never really been that chef. I'm more kind of a blue collar kind of, I just cook what I feel like and what I like. I've never really been that kind of that chef, to be honest with you. So I truly didn't. I've known him.
Who's this guy? Who?
Like, kind of, yeah. And I know that's lame or whatever, but I really didn't.
Of course, Buddha and Tom are just like,
are freaking out.
God.
They're freaking out. Like, I swear, Tom, there's tears in his eyes.
Yeah.
it's an interesting, that's an interesting observation, right? Like what we've seen in the last 20, 25 years is like this emergence of chef world.
Yeah.
And it's this like kind of great global Borg, and right. And it's like, and God, there's increased media and there are these famous chefs and a million different designations and awards and Michelin and this and that and the other. And it's sort of like, you know, I think there are authors who, God, they're always on the book festival circuit and they'll do every panel. And by the way, and it's wonderful, right? Like you're a person of letters and you're, and then there, you meet these novelists who are like, yeah, I live in a cabin in Vermont. And I sometimes go into Boston once a year. And but like, you seem to live more of, which is an interesting juxtaposition, right? Cause I think Top Chef is a place where kind of global cuisine comes together and they're the Top Chef family, but you in and of yourself are just kind of happiest in Saskatoon doing your thing.
Yeah, and I live in a cabin most of the time. 70% of my life, I live in my cabin. I bought a 1960s A-frame boat 6-7 years ago, and I've been slowly renovating it. And slowly, I basically live there full time now. I have a townhouse as well, but that's my kind of life. I just love it. I feed deer every day. I love animals. I hang out with, you know, my family, my girlfriend. I'm pretty chill. I've been lucky. I got to work in, you know, in Tokyo and London and New York and lots of the places all I kind of wanted to work. But I'm a pretty chill guy. And to say, like I said, I eat the same food all the time. Like if I can have a ham and Swiss sandwich and soup 4 times a week for lunch, I'm stoked. I love it. It's a really good ham and Swiss, but it's, you know, I'm not that fancy.
So on this particular episode, Dale, you had the chicken noodle soup, which I think had a lot of heart in it. Like you chose the emoji and conceptually it made a lot of sense. Did you know that when you plated that it wasn't, you wish you had more time with the dish, and that I think Padma said in the episode that like, you just can't pull that off, no pun intended, in the time constraints. Did you feel that?
No, you know, I mean, yes, in that situation, absolutely. I didn't think it was the best that it could be, you know, and I'll be the first one to admit that generally with any dish, you know, but I've made amazing chicken broth in 30 minutes with a pressure cooker lots of times in the restaurant. It's something that I've tested lots of different broths and how fast I can make them and how flavorful I can make them in my preparation to do Top Chef. It just didn't work out that time. I didn't get enough, you know, I didn't get to roast the chicken enough before I got to do it. I put too much liquid in. I didn't have enough time to reduce it down quite, you know, all the factors were in there. I probably didn't play the challenge, you know, maybe as clever as others. You know, obviously Buddha crushed it. You know, he's got all the molds and he's doing cool stuff. And, you know, I maybe took it a little bit too literal. The noodles too, I don't think it was it's a pulled Korean noodle that I did. It wasn't supposed to be like noodles, like as in like you'd have a chicken noodle soup. It was a, you know, a pulled noodle. So it should be a chewy noodle. I don't think I necessarily nailed that either. So, all in all, you know, if I sat down and taste and had it as a dish, I would be happy with it, but it definitely wasn't necessarily, you know, a Top Chef level kind of quick fire dish.
Yeah. Dale, I was wondering the whole, molds thing. I'm curious, what did you bring to London with you to incorporate into the competition, and what were some of the constraints, and what, as someone who's competed on the show before, what are some of the strategies that you were going through in your head of what kind of tools or ingredients can I bring to give myself a leg up?
Yeah, I brought things like like a spice grinder, and I brought my own pressure cooker because I do like pressure cookers a lot. I think, and then the ones on set are fine, but everybody grabs them so much and you get used to kind of one that you like. So I brought that, everything from, like a little mesh thing for making like broths and stuff as well. So you get your kind of equipment, and then I did bring some molds, some flexi molds and stuff for some desserts. And I generally do quite a bit of desserts, and I never shy away from doing desserts. And then on the ingredient side of things, I got like yuzu, maple syrup, chili peppers, you know, those kind of things. The things that, you know, most of the time you can get most of those things. And I find even on my own season, I really didn't use many of my boxes. It's more just kind of there just in case. With Top Chef, you never get to cook what you want to cook anyway. It's like, it's only really at the end you get to really do what you want to do. And I found at least for me, I can only speak for myself. Whenever I tried to stuff a dish into a challenge is usually when I didn't do well, in my season. And I find sometimes, I think if you have certain things you want to use, that's what you do. You kind of force them in there. So I brought what I thought I might use, but I wasn't too fanatical about using it.
What was the vibe this season in terms of competitive juices? Like it seemed, you may note of it in your testimonials, even here, like you've changed in 13 years. Mm-hmm. Has the show gotten more collegial, and is it because there's less at stake, more at stake? I'm just curious, like the general kind of mood among the chefs.
I think it's definitely got a lot more pleasant over the years, for sure. I would say, I don't know if that's the case because the competitors have, or if the show has decided that that's not necessary to build the storyline. I think it's dramatic enough, and I think people appreciate what everyone's doing on the show enough to not make it dramatic in the sense of like a season where Marcel was on, where, you know, he was up on the roof and rapping and people were like fighting and it was very contentious and all that kind of stuff. So I don't know if they necessarily needed that after a number of years. This season, I think, is probably different even more so because the fact that everybody came in highly respecting each other, because the fact that everybody has already accomplished a lot on their respective shows. On my season, I was very competitive and even pretty aggressive. I was pretty mind games, even in the sense of like, I was openly telling people that I was going to win, like to the other competitors, whether it be on camera or we'd be in elevator together. I remember there was like eight of us left and I was in the elevator and our house mom was there. And she was like, and someone said something, I said, no, but like, I'm going to win this season. Right. Like, you guys are aware of that and stuff. And that kind of came from my, like, training it with Gordon Ramsay and stuff, in the sense that that's how it really was. And it wasn't, and I didn't say it in like a nasty way. It was just more like a overlining confidence. Like, this is what's going to happen, which really does affect people's ability to have confidence in yourself. So if you doubt yourself at all, that's going to really push you down a little bit. So there's a lot of that, but this season was very cordial. And honestly, I respect everybody who was there. I think everybody had a chance to win. Obviously, certain people are doing very, very well and maybe beating out other people, including myself, clearly.
Dale, when you look back at this season, what was your favorite challenge and what was the toughest one for you? Because this one where you can't use utensils, you had to have a message. You had to have it visually stunning. You go with a mole, and I kind of felt bad because it was like you were doing something new and you were trying to play up the whole don't be ignorant thing. And to me, it didn't feel like your challenge, but I could be wrong about that. No. Was this one tough for you?
Yeah, it was. And I don't really know why it was tough for me, but, I don't know if that was the right time to try something new. And I don't really like any of the challenges that where it's about the story. I really don't. I don't really think that that's, I've dealt with my trauma. So I'm not, so I don't have like, you know, just because I'm not going to harp on or say, you know, anyone else uses the story more, but I don't think this is, at the end of the day, a cooking competition. It's not like a story competition or who's come from worse or who's dealing with more in the sense of emotionally. So I've never associated, I associate food with childhood and stuff. And this is something my mom makes and it makes me feel good and that kind of stuff. But I'm a pretty literal chef. I cook for flavor and for, you know, all that kind of stuff. So you're right. My story really probably didn't hold up to everyone else's story, but it was a slightly different challenge for me. And I think I just thought of it too literal in the sense of that they wanted us to do something very formal and something like Gaga would, what he was doing is something you're going to lick off the plate or that kind of stuff. And so I think that was my part problem, not the challenge's problem. Cause clearly other people did much more casual, like Sarah did an amazing rib, you know, I do amazing ribs. I don't know why I didn't just do an amazing rib or something, you know, that's smart. She plays.
I was looking at the menu on Aiden Kitchen and Bar, which I have in front of me. And I was like, yeah, like those chicken wings with the lemongrass. Like, yeah,
I do hand food nonstop every day, all day. I do everything from croquettes to, like, you know, just super tasty, just casual, rustic. And for whatever reason, I got it in my head that it needed to be like a more of a formal thing and it needed to be, you know, high end and we needed to use all those kind of things. But, and that's my issue. That's not necessarily anything else. And when I was looking around kind of going, I think I kind of got in my head on this one. And, whether it's because I just got back in and I wanted to swing or whatever, I do. I was happy with the dish. You know, I think it, you know, it had, you know, pickled onions, it had some acidity, had some, you know, heat from the jalapenos, you know, it had some crunch, it had, you know, I do feel like it was a good dish. And honestly, I've been to Mexico twice since the show, and I went on a complete mole tour with my business partner and my girlfriend and stuff. And I tasted probably 40 different moles, and I feel like I make a good mole. I'm not going to lie. Like, and I'm not saying that because, you know, for any other reason, you know, I truly still don't think you have to be from somewhere. You know, I've met some amazing cooks that have never been to Italy, but make some of the best Italian food I've ever had in my life, you know? And I think that can be the same with a mole or anything else. So, I definitely have gone and done some deep research and tasted kind of everything I can from just to give the respect, you know, to the cuisine and to the mole. So
Dale, hats off to you, because you not only went head to head with Begonia, but you delivered in a big way. And I'm just wondering, what was it like to face off in Last Chance Kitchen against some amazing chefs and power through, and then feel like, oh, I'm right here on the cusp. And then you got to go head to head with Begonia, who I think, as far as resumes go, she's a juggernaut on the show.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Super strong and very confident. And, you know, and she doesn't shy away from competing and from saying what she thinks and everything else. So I love that.
I'm reading between the lines there, Dale. I'm reading between the lines there. Yeah, go ahead.
You know, I loved it. It was easily, I mean, I showed it all on the show. You know, I never thought I would cry or even shed a tear on television and stuff. And I got really emotional because honestly, going home the way that it went home the first time, I accepted it because I felt like we were in the bottom, you know, me and May, like I knew that we were in the bottom. I felt like that the whole time. So it wasn't a surprise, but to get the opportunity to fight back and then to get to do it in a big challenge, you know, it didn't show, but Tom even said, you know, when we were standing there, me and Begonia saying like, this is literally one of the hardest challenges we've ever given anybody to do, because it really is. An hour is not like an hour. That's hour to get in the kitchen, to set up, to do all your kind of things. And then just to build towers, if you have to take these plates, put them on there, put all the things, that alone takes 5 to 7 minutes to kind of get done and get it plated and stuff. So realistically, you're looking at about 42 to 45 minutes max of actually cooking. So, you know, it was said that I played safe, which I don't really understand what that means. I mean, we were told to do a biscuit, a sandwich, and a pastry, and that's what I did. I made a biscuit, a sandwich, and a pastry. And so I felt the best I've ever felt after that challenge. You know, I think you asked me what was your favorite challenge. That's easily my favorite challenge because it was a hard challenge. I was struggling. They made me seem pretty calm in that challenge, but I was struggling. Like I was pushing and pushing and pushing. I was grabbing things with my hands and plating with it. Like it was like we were both pushing like crazy and stuff. And I feel like my experience in the sense that it had came through there in the sense of making sure that you're getting everything on the plate. You're making sure that everything tastes properly. Like I said, I mean, during the challenge, I made sure that I tested the biscuit as well. I wasn't just going to whack them in the oven and hope for the best. And so I think that's what you do in competition. You try to eliminate all the elements that could go wrong. And I think I did that better that day, at least.
Can I ask an offensive question? What is the appeal of a Scotch egg? What is a freaking, it's food they could only invent in England.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or you Scotland, know, apparently.
I've had more bad Scotch eggs than I've had good ones. And
exactly.
I've also had some good ones too. I felt like it was a good Scotch egg. It wasn't a great Scotch egg. You know, and there's always tons of factors in Top Chef, right? It's like just the fact that I, you know, not being able to get pinko breadcrumbs versus only being able to get like more of like a powder breadcrumb, you know, that's the difference. And when you only have an hour and a half in a kitchen with one oven, the option of making your own breadcrumbs isn't even there. And even if it is, you still can't make proper breadcrumbs in an hour and a half for a Scotch egg. You really need those pinko breadcrumbs. And so when that's not available, it is what it is, you know, and so there's no point making excuses and stuff, but all those little things factor into going from an okay thing to a slightly better thing. So, you know, it's the same as grinding your own pork. You know, I would never just buy ground pork to make a Scotch egg. I would get some really highly fat, nice, you know, make sure it's super cold and grind it when it's half frozen almost. So it's, you know, and you can whip it nicely, but all that's not Top Chef. And that's why this is such a hard competition. So by no means an excuse, but those are factors that kind of come into something that's so simple. You know, in hindsight, I could come up with tons of different ways of twisting it, but again, it was a partnership that we had to kind of do together. And it was a tough one.
Hey, last question here, and we'll let you go, Dale. I'm curious, as someone who's a triathlon athlete and someone who loves the ultra performance, ultra endurance competitions, what is it like to exercise in Top Chef world? Like, were you training while you were out there? Did you have time to work out? Like, what was it like for Dale, who's you know, one of these triathlon athletes, and then you're sequestered in London and Paris? Like, what does that look like for you?
I tried to, as much as I could, in my room. Like when we were sequestered, I would do push-ups and sit-ups just to feel active. I generally have so much energy. That's part of the reason why I do triathlon and stuff, that I feel like if I don't use all my energy, I can't sleep at night. And that's what I felt like when I was in there too. So I did run and stuff as much as I could. My issue was eating, because I eat a certain amount of calories and I eat a certain way. I like to eat pretty clean and pretty healthy. I'm not, you know, weird about it, but, which is difficult because you're always on the move and you're always doing stuff and we end up eating a lot of obviously mostly bought in stuff. So I made sure that they would have, you know, yogurts and granolas and bananas and all the different stuff that I needed in my room. So then that way I could still consume and I would always have my little kind of snacks and stuff like that while we were there. And yeah, so I did it that way best that I could, but I definitely, when I got back, I was standing in front of the mirror and I was like, my girlfriend was looking at me. I'm like, look at me. Because it's such a, like a head thing. And then she's like, give it a month. And then, you know, it's a hard road back with triathlon because it's such an all consuming sport that you train. Yeah. I train 15 to 18 hours a week. And so, when you take that away, things, you lose your fitness pretty quickly.
Were you even allowed to go on runs outside?
No, in downstairs, you could take a rain guard would take you down to the gym. And so you could stand there and or you could run on the treadmills and use the gym, but they would stand there and wait for you and stuff, which is fine. But yeah.
That's the thing that would freak me out about being on a reality show. It's not, being on camera or having to do all this stuff. It's just like the as someone who worked on a reality show in 2004, like it's just that you have to be chaperoned to the most
everywhere.
basic everywhere. Human activities. Like and I just want to go for a run. Like, and you're in a lovely area, Russell Square. There's some good running around there. Like you're not far from Hyde Park. Like, nope. I've got a basically an ankle monitor that is going to take me to
another constraint in Top Chef.
Yeah, it is. And you have to deal with it. And the funny thing is that there's so many levels of staff, from the PAs to the wranglers to everybody. And so sometimes like you'd be in your room and I know this is like, you're just wanting to use you're just using the bathroom, but then you get your door knocked on every 10 minutes in the morning time. Okay, we're going to be leaving 20 minutes. Okay, here's a jacket. Here's like this. And you're like, yeah, I get it. And you're sitting, you're like, just let me use the bathroom without knocking on my door. Yeah.
This was a pleasure, Dale.
Well, anytime, honestly, I've enjoyed it. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're gonna have to meet up sometime and get some Saskatchewan food. And I know it's a little out of the way for our listeners, but if you have just a second to tell us what you're doing now and how to enjoy your food and your cuisine.
I'm in Saskatchewan. I've got 5 restaurants here, 2 in Regina and 3 in Saskatoon. And I do everything from Japanese, Korean to, we have a small Italian place that does, all handmade pasta to order. And then Aiden and Avenue, which is kind of more French and kind of global. I'm in Saskatchewan, kind of doing events all over the place, in Canada. I'm hopefully doing some collaborations with some of the chefs from the show once it all wraps up. So other than that, recipes, videos on my Instagram and TikTok. So check those out and follow my triathlon.
Please reserve a Diefenbaker trout for me.
Yeah, it's delicious. We don't use salmon around here.
Some freshwater trout. Like all right. That looked really good.
Good. All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Dale.
That was Dale, and that was great. Tom, Closing thoughts as we go into the final nine.
Yeah, so Dale and Sylvia are in Last Chance Kitchen. We'll figure out what happens there. Obviously, we watch these episodes after they air and release to the world. So we're going to see what happens in that sideshow. Not in a pejorative sense that it's a sideshow, but you get it. But like, I really do believe that if I could ask you, Kevin, to do a redraft of this show, of the chefs, I think you're going to be, you're not stressing because any one of the people that you're selecting in a draft, I feel like have a pretty good shot at winning this whole thing. So I thought this was another excellent challenge. I thought Gagam was just a perfect judge for this show, this episode. And yeah, I loved learning about the life outside of the kitchen from Dale. So it was really cool to see the different things that he brought. The pressure cooker always goes wrong on Top Chef. So it makes sense that you want to bring your own pressure cooker. And I'm sorry to see Dale go, because I feel like if he made some other decisions on what to make or execution wise, he could have won this whole thing. I was really impressed with him and sad to see him go to Last Chance Kitchen. But as you saw earlier, he can win this whole thing and get back into the competition.
It is wide open, Tom. It is the Western Conference of the NBA of Top Chef is season 20.
That's right. That's right. We'll see who comes out on top. But next week, some more drama. We'll see who comes out of Last Chance Kitchen. And I need to get some of that. I need to get some of that papaya salad deconstructed from Amar. Just what a dish. Really impressed with him so far. It has been a breakout performance from Amar the last few episodes. So let's see if we can keep that momentum going.
Yeah, Amar, if you were listening, get that off menu at Vaca, because I know it doesn't really fit with the Spanish theme, but we would love to sample it. How cool would it be just to kind of stroll in Costa Mesa at a Spanish top, you know, style restaurant and say, yeah, you know, off menu, I want the papaya salad. That would be pretty cool. For Tom Haberstroh, this is Kevin Arnovitz, and this is Pack Your Knives.